Welcome to The Frenzy.
I'm Melissa Carter.
And I'm Jen Hobby. The Frenzy's mission is to celebrate friendships over 40.
We believe that women can thrive through authentic relationships, self-discovery, and spiritual exploration.
Our decades-long friendship continues to grow because we are willing to go there and share our truths through life's highs and lows.
That's why The Frenzy is here, to hold space for women who are 40 and older, because at this age, your story matters more than ever. So I'm Melissa, and I thought I was healthy back in the day by smoking American Spirit cigarettes.
Girl, that's a healthy cigarette. You were conscious.
And I even bought them at a store in Little Five Points, being hippy-dippy, thinking, you know what, Little Five Points, they're not going to have dangerous cigarettes in here.
I love it. That's fantastic. I'm Jen Hobby, and I love the smell of school supplies. Brand new fresh boxes of crayons and notebooks with nothing yet written in them. Perfect little pages. I just love it. I'll just smell them all day. I'm like that weird cheerleader from SNL who smelled her hands in her armpits. I'm like, give me that.
Mary Catherine Gallagher. Can't believe I remembered her name.
Give me those freshly sharpened pencils. I want to smell them.
I am jealous of school shopping though.
Yes.
I do want
school shopping is the best.
Yeah, spiral notebooks and stuff. And I know that a certain store that's not a sponsor, you know, is selling Trapper Keepers again.
Awesome.
Have you seen that?
No, but I want one. I might get one for the Frenzy notes.
I know, right? And one last thing. I thought I was really fancy in high school. I got the denim notebook and went to Shady Brook Mall in Columbia. Uh-huh. And had an airbrush on it.
You were super cool.
Super cool. Speaking of, Shady Brook Mall in Columbia, Tennessee just got demolished.
Oh.
I know. My heart was hurting.
Anyway, the last time you've been to a mall? Think about that.
I know, right? But it was like, that's my childhood. Pirate's Cove's in there. Donkey Kong's in there. Anyway, coming up on today's episode, we are celebrating new beginnings, not the old stuff, the new stuff. And it's the start of a brand new season of The Frenzy. So welcome to season two. Yay.
Yes. Welcome to season two. This is exciting. It is the start of a new school year for us as moms of elementary school kids. And plus coming up, you will meet Katherine Kice, a wellness junkie that's going to inspire you to embark on a new beginning in wellness because it is never too late to begin.
Amen, sister. And have you subscribed to the Frenzy podcast yet? I know a lot of people are like, I've listened to it. I mean to. I need to catch up. Whatever it is, we need you to go ahead and subscribe and leave us a review. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you are listening to podcasts.
And if you enjoy this episode of The Frenzy, please share it with a friend of yours. We would love for more women like you over 40 to find out about our show. And Melissa Carter, we're going to dive into our new beginnings that start about halfway through the calendar year here in just a minute. But first, let's thank our sponsors. Just heard your friend, neighbor, or colleague has been diagnosed with cancer? Your first instinct is, what can I do? Kick It Pajamas is the answer. Kick It sells pajamas, gowns, and other accessories specifically designed for those going through cancer treatment. Go to kickitpajamas.com and use the code FRENZY to get 10% off. That's kickitpajamas.com, code FRENZY for 10% off. Give the gift of comfort and style. Kick It Pajamas. Let's kick cancer off the planet.
Hey, it's Melissa. My family has a history of vascular disease, so I make a point to get my vascular system checked through Lifeline screening each year. The health of your arteries is important and is critical to understand your risk of stroke and cardiovascular disease. With a simple preventative screening, I get peace of mind or early detection so that I can take action. Since 1993, Lifeline Screening's highly experienced staff has screened over 10 million people in order to bring awareness to potential health problems for follow-up with your physician. To find out more, go to lifelinescreening.com. That's lifelinescreening.com, and be sure to use the code FRIENDS. That's Frenzy without the Y, so that's FRIENDZ.
Okay, Melissa Carter, halfway through the year, but it's a new beginning for each of us. We're not celebrating New Year's Eve and the new year and the calendar year rolling over, but we are starting a new season of The Frenzy, and we are starting a new school year. So first of all, what does a new season of The Frenzy podcast mean to you?
I think it means accomplishment on our part, because this was an idea that we thought of in my driveway, right? Mm-hmm. And we thought we would try it out and see what we thought. And, you know, I just think that we work so naturally together and that we're good at what we do. I mean, there's no, women need to say that. And so we created something that I think is very important. And over time, we realized this truly could be a great mission so that women over 40 could thrive in better friendships with themselves and with other women. So I think that this means that we're on track. Like it's like we've warmed up and we got into a rhythm and now we're really here. So I'm very excited that we actually have a new season. What about you?
I feel the same way. I feel like the Frenzy launch last year was like we were crawling, right? Mm-hmm. Like we were like maybe like a little toddler who's like 9 months old, just kind of getting their legs and they're like wobbling around a little bit, like trying to figure things out. And I feel like now we are up and running because we are more focused on who our audience is to serve. We are more focused on what kind of content we want to have and what kind of conversations we want to share on the Frenzy. I know that I've grown so much from that first season, just from all the fascinating women that we talk to.
Right.
The interviews, you and I sharing our stories together. I just feel like I have grown leaps and bounds just emotionally, spiritually. I've learned so much. And I'm so excited what this next season is going to bring with our new guests and our deeper conversations.
Well, it goes back to what Jenna said before, where we're doing this with you. We're not doing this at you, right?
So yes.
We're both over 40. And so when she said, we're learning things as you're learning things. But the other important lesson, I think, in having a season two is for people to not give up on what they love to do, you know, and especially women over 40, don't be afraid to try new things and to follow through with it. Because, you know, we talked off air before where when people start podcasts, what is it? They usually get bored with it and give up on it within a few months.
It's 16 episodes.
And that's what that's
usually about how long a podcast lasts is 16 episodes. And then people quit because it is a lot of work.
Yeah.
And people just get excited about the idea and then fizzle out on it. But
right. And it can be a slow build too, because, you know, people get frustrated that they don't have a million followers in 16 episodes, which you don't. I mean, we had 22 episodes last season. So we surpassed the 16, they're always here for you to listen to and go back to. That's the other thing I love about podcasting is that that content is always accessible and this content will always be accessible. So moving on to school year, because not only is it a new season for the podcast and we appreciate you listening, but also it's a new school year. And I'm, you know, curious, what does the new school year bring for your family?
Well, I'm a little emotional because my baby is starting kindergarten.
Yeah.
So this is a big step into like real school. And so, my older daughter is starting third grade, which
I can't believe it. Third grader.
They always say that up until third grade, you are learning to read. And then in third grade, you read to learn. So that's going to be exciting shift for her. So I'm excited to watch her continue to grow and blossom. And then my baby is going to real kindergarten and she's already started to sound out words and is reading a little bit and doing some sight words. So I'm just so excited because I love to read. I'm an avid reader. I picked up reading again during the pandemic and I've just devour through books at night and on the weekends and stuff. And so I am excited that we can all read together, like our whole big nerdy family can read.
I love it.
As it was coming out of my mouth, I'm like, that sounds so nerdy, but you know what? I'm fine with that. I love that. And I cannot wait to see how that opens her eyes as well. So I think the beginning of a school year for me is excitement. And it's also a time to like reset some of those routines and rules in the house that we've been missing this summer.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
How about for you?
Mr. Carter starts the first grade this year. And I think the difference for me is he was a remote learner for half of his preschool. Well, not quite half, but the last third of his preschool year and his entire kindergarten year was at home. So the new school year brings, surprisingly, not anxiety. I'm excited for him. I really was in the moment in kindergarten. So I knew that remote kindergarten would not last. I was the parent who loved it. I know there's a lot of parents who are frustrated by that, but I knew that it was a special opportunity for me to be home with my child, be basically his kindergarten assistant. I was able to, you know, share in all his projects and really see his learning. Cause you know, he's going to be the guy that doesn't express himself too much. He's the guy that I have to ask several times already, you know, how was the day? What did you do? And he's, you know, he's past it. Like he's the guy that, well, I've already done that. I don't need to talk about it again. I'm moving forward. So I took advantage of the fact that I got to see what he was doing firsthand. And so going back to school, I don't have a lot of anxiety about him going back because I, you know, we've got to move forward. You know, he will be back in the classroom with his friends, probably masked up. I hope masked up. And we have to kind of keep going through this crap again, but it's going to be a new structure. Like you said, I'm looking forward to him being at school. Since I work from home, I can probably get a lot more accomplished and be more efficient at home now with him in the classroom rather than him being at home. But it's going to also be a kind of an empty nest situation for a little bit because I've had him with me that whole time. So, but I'm excited. It's, you know, you have to keep going and he's growing up and I'm, you know, we don't raise babies. We're raising young men and women. And so he's a man who's in a boy's body and it's my job to get the man to where he needs to be. So he needs to be at school with his friends and learning on his own and being self-sufficient. And I look forward to it.
It's going to be so exciting. All right. Also in new beginnings, what does the midway point of the year bring up for you personally? Not as a mom, take off the mom hat and just put back on the Melissa hat.
It's interesting because since I work from home, things are different. Like there was a lot of markers that I had working in an office, and at home things are just kind of fluid. But I will say this midway point, it makes me want to take advantage of the pool. I moved to a place that has a pool for the first time in my life. So I want to take more advantage of the pool before they close it. But it also brings an excitement for the fall because there's a lot of activities in the fall. And again, everything's kind of up in the air. But I think that the pandemic has really made me reflect a lot about personal needs and goals. And so I don't feel like I'm behind. I think for a lot of people, they may think this is a time to really have to catch up. Mm-hmm. But I'm just grateful to still be here. Honestly, I'm just truly still at the point that if you survive the pandemic, you're blessed. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just looking forward to, you know, midway point for me is just trying to make sure that I stay that focused on my emotional and physical needs.
Yeah. I feel like priorities were realigned during COVID and all of that. And so that's my thing for the end of the year. As things get busier and we go back to school and there's more activities and there's more things going on, I want to make sure that my priorities stay in line, that I protect our family time, that I protect our downtime.
Yeah.
You know, that we don't get too overscheduled again. I'm afraid of the pendulum swinging right back where it was before. So I'm feeling towards the end of the year protective of that special time to limit it. And
it's going to be an odd comparison. I don't want to offend anybody. It was just the moniker during 9/11 was never forget. This is a completely different situation. But I think that one of the things about never forget, you have to remember, you don't forget, but the emotions are not going to still be there necessarily. And that's on purpose, right? The fear and the anxiety, you know, drove a togetherness that you want to maintain that I think we've gotten out of. But, and the same with this, like you, when you prepare to keep that going, you have to do it and find a way to do it without having that emotion driving it, because your body can't handle intense emotions for very long. Right. So I do the same thing where it's like, I want to, you know, I want to be I want to come out evolved. I want to be different. I'm still me, but I want to be, there are certain things I want to change, which is, again, being more in tune with what I want, which is for women, I think is very hard. But I have to be able to do it logically and not just emotionally, because in the end it's going to be your mindset rather than your heart that drives that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's the challenge, is you're not going to feel the same way in a year. I'm not going to feel the same way in 2 years. You know, hopefully we're out of this in 2 and 3 years where it's going to be a memory. You know, that's when you have to really struggle to make sure that you justify, I'm going to say no. I'm going to learn to say no to things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of that, you know, what are some of the goals that you have for 2021? Like specifically, and is there new beginnings maybe that you hope for in 2022 that you're able to kind of get a handle on?
I think sometimes I want to follow my creativity through a little bit more, because I'm the type of person who has a lot of big creative ideas that I want to do, and then I end up getting kind of stuck and not finishing them. Mm-hmm. So that would be a goal in mind for me for the end of 2021, before 2022, follow through on some of the fun creative ideas I have, and not just let them live in the idea space, but become reality.
Yeah.
So that's what I hope for. And then I'll probably wake up December 31st and be like, crap, it's going to be in the next year. I'm really going to do it this time.
Well, I tend to procrastinate on things, like house stuff. So when my goal is to be social again, because it's not, that doesn't come naturally to me. Like
I know, Melissa Carter, you love yourself some home time. You're a little homebody.
I'm a homebody.
I'm with you. I am too.
It's hard for me to initiate, but I know that in the past I have tried to have specific parties to force me to be, to be social. So it's not about me going to somebody else. I host things to get me out of that comfort zone. And so Oscar party, I do every year, except obviously this year. And then I started like a Boxing Day thing, which is, Boxing Day is the day after Christmas. So if people are in town, they come over.
Oh,
and, so I, you know, that, so I, my goals for the rest of 2021 is to, have my house to where it truly is like a home, a hosting person's home. Right. So, and here's an example. So I usually tend to also, as the daughter of a couple who survived the Depression, they were very much penny pinchers. And, you know, my mother would be the one to save leftovers from restaurants and napkins in her purse. Like she, because it's the, you know, the reason that your grandmothers and my mother did it is because they grew up in the Depression, and and maybe growing, you know, having this pandemic,
scarcity was real.
Yes. And maybe something about the pandemic may have the same effect on us in some ways that our descendants will make fun of us for, but for them, it was, you save things. My father would, there were times where he would actually save dental floss. I'm like, you don't have to do that. You don't have to reuse the dental floss you just used. I just thought that was so gross, bless his heart. But it was, you know, it was their mindset. And so I tend to not pull the trigger on anything that costs money for the same reason. Even though I might be able to afford it, I'm bad about not getting certain things that just need to be done, and just go ahead and pull the trigger and pay for it. And so, anyway, going back to the house, one of the things, I have a friend who's an artist, and he started doing murals. And I told him several years ago, I would love to get a mural in my home. And so recently I pulled the trigger on it, because I'm like, spend the money, have the mural. So he just completed the mural a couple weeks ago in my home.
Awesome. And so I want to see it.
And that's the reason I did, is because not only does it make me feel good about my own house, but I'm like, I can't wait for friends to come over and feel this environment of art that I truly love. And so anyway, my goals for the rest of the year is to continue with that. Like, it was such a great feeling to walk into that room now, and it's like, you did that for yourself, Carter. You spent the money and it's okay. Mm-hmm. And so the same with the race. So by Boxing Day, I want to be able to have people over and be proud of the space that I've created to invite people in, when most of my life, it's been, my space has kind of been a hole that I don't want anybody to come into. If that.
Right. Well, makes and sense. I think, so when you have a public facing job, like you have had for so long, your home becomes this little private sanctuary where you get to escape all of that.
True.
And so I understand what you're saying, but your main job during the day now is by yourself. So I can see that transitional shift to opening up and wanting to be around more people and be more social, opening your home.
Well, and especially since I am single and live alone, and during the pandemic being at home. Yes, I think you're right. I didn't think about the fact that it was more of a place of solace during my morning show career. And now it's like, okay, well, I kind of wish that somebody else was here.
It's a shift. Very natural. Very natural. All right. So you're going to get your home ready for socializing.
Yeah.
I'm going to complete some creative projects, including some stuff we want to do for the Frenzy.
That's correct.
Those are the ones top of mind.
Yes.
And by the end of the year, we're going to come back to this episode and then celebrate it.
That's right.
Okay.
Exactly.
We'll hold each other accountable, right?
Sounds good.
And we want to encourage you to share stories like this about new beginnings, especially with your girlfriends. If we open up about new beginnings, they're much easier to start with a partner. So think about who could you ask for support in a new endeavor?
I love it. All right. You know what? We are thrilled to introduce you to today's guest, Katherine Kies. She's a self-proclaimed wellness junkie who can help us launch into new beginnings by sharing her personal story and her wealth of knowledge around holistic health practices. You may be able to approach a new school year with a better knack for inclusion after hearing Katherine's mission, because her story is so unique and so inspirational. So ladies, please welcome our strong yet vulnerable, accomplished and amazing guest, Katherine Kies.
Katherine Kies, welcome to the Frenzy.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for having me. I am so excited to be here.
We are thrilled to talk to you. Katherine is an author, an advocate, a board certified health coach, and a self-proclaimed wellness junkie. So we have so many questions to ask you. I don't even think you got time. I really don't.
You might as well get comfortable. Take your shoes off.
Cozy.
We're gonna be here.
We got a lot to dive in with you, Katherine. And you know, here on the Frenzy, we celebrate women over 40. That's our mission, and we believe it is a fabulous time of life. But the number one complaint that I hear from all my friends my age is about lack of energy. So that's my first question for you: why are we all so dang tired?
Women, in my experience, who are over 40 are wearing a lot of hats. And they take it very seriously. So if you think about being the CEO of your life, which Melissa, I think is something that you say often, you're doing a lot of things. You're taking care of a lot of people, and your energy and your headspace gets divided amongst all those priorities. So of course you're going to be tired because you're showing up for so many people in so many ways. And I think one of the very easiest ways to go about trying to manage that energy and regain that energy is just mindfully paying attention to where are you investing and where are you getting a return. And that just kind of helps balance the, is it worth me doing this? And sometimes it's just worrying and you're spending that mental energy worrying. And if you aren't really getting anything out of that worrying cycle, maybe don't do it. Or social media, you lose hours Instagram scrolling. So maybe don't do it, but it's just, it comes down to that mindfulness.
And I wanted to jump in with a follow-up because I notice that, you know, I wear a lot of hats, and Jen and I both are mothers of young children at this age. And at the end of the day, I can reflect back on how much I got accomplished. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, I'm thinking I'm fatigued, but then before I go to bed, I realize, wait a second, I did a lot today. Mm-hmm. And I tend to be more accomplished in little things than I was when I was younger, because as you said, I'm more focused and have more of a purpose with the things I do now. However, my emotional offering of the day is different. So that my question to you is, do you find that lack of energy is due to physicality, which we tend to do? We're like, oh, well, I'm over 40. Physically, I'm not the same. Mm-hmm. Or it sounds like, to your point, there is an emotional element that we may not be as fired up about some things as we used to be when we were younger. And it shows in the way that we see our days.
I think that's a great point. And yes, I think it is more of that emotionality, as you said. And I think even there are two things coming to mind. One is, if you look at stress in general, stress can be broken into three main components: chemical, emotional, or physical. So those three, just if you look at maybe what's going in, can definitely affect your level of energy. And then if you dive more into this framework of thinking emotion versus physical, What I like to do is think about it as a wheel, like almost like a pie with different slices. And you have everything from how much physical exercise you're getting, your food and nutrition, including hydration, your financial, your social, your relationships, which is kind of social, but a little bit different, your professional, your spiritual. And if you break your world and the things where you invest yourself into these pieces, you can start to see where are you feeling very strong and robust, and where do you feel depleted or like you're out of balance? And I feel like that kind of helps give some direction and clarity for people in a very visual, accessible way to start assessing like, oh, I feel out of whack here. Maybe that's an opportunity for me to invest more in myself or take this off my plate, things like that.
So when I'm eating my son's pirate's booty as a snack instead of vegetables and I don't feel good the next day, I should understand there's a correlation there.
Might be directly related.
It's just a philosophy. Yes.
So Catherine, you haven't always been a wellness junkie. Can you take us down your autoimmune journey and what brought you to what you do today?
Yes, absolutely. So I grew up with a food allergy. I had a nut allergy and asthma growing up. So I was fairly familiar with that. And then in my 20s, I started doing triathlons and half marathons. I was in graduate school while working full time. And I started just feeling off. And it eventually got to the point where my skin was broken out all the time. I had digestive issues. I was tired constantly. I was having balance issues. I was losing feeling in my fingers and toes and like numbness and tingling. And as many of us do in the Western world, I was seeing multiple doctors. So somebody for GI, somebody for dermatological, somebody for neurological, and then a general practitioner. And each of them had a different approach to treating my issue, but they were only treating my symptom. They weren't treating what was an underlying cause. And at the time I didn't realize that there could be an underlying cause that could result in multiple issues. So I found a doctor who was a functional medicine doctor early on when this wasn't really as popular as functional medicine has become now. And she looked at research that indicated that women of Western European descent within my age group would present symptoms of MS, which is what they thought I had, when it was actually a gluten intolerance. Hmm. And so that gluten sensitivity was wreaking havoc on my body, causing a lot of gut imbalance, which then leaky gut, which then means I was not digesting nutrition from my food. I was chronically systemically inflamed. My joints hurt all the time. And my neurological system was actually kind of shutting down. So once I was able to take gluten out of my diet and understand more about how amazing your body can heal itself when given the right pieces, I was able to navigate my own health. And then I realized I was able to do this because I was lucky enough to find that doctor, but I can't be the only one going through these kinds of things. So it needs to be easier for people to be educated and to find like accessible, relatable tips that they can put into practice so they feel better, so they have more energy, so they can do the things that fill their joy jar. So I ended up becoming a health coach and developing programs for corporate wellness, small groups, and individuals to help just make this information more accessible and available.
Jen, I want you to understand, you know, Jen and I have talked before about different words and people's perception of words and how, you know, choosing your words carefully. And so I can relate to the leaky gut. I've said on the show before that I was diagnosed with IBS back when I was 7 years old. And so Jen, like it was called spastic colon, you know, irritable bowel syndrome. Like my bowel is just, you know, irritated by it. So, and that's not sexy. And now they call it leaky gut. I mean, and so there's nothing sexy about it, but I do appreciate Catherine, what you're doing, because my journey with that has just been, well, eat something. If it doesn't agree with you, then don't eat it, has basically been the philosophy for most of my life. And then now they've studied it, and now there's a FODMAP and there's different things that you can follow. But, you know, how did you emotionally handle when people would tease you about these things? Because I can't imagine you not having people kind of give you resistance when you started saying, I'm changing the way I eat, I got to be gluten free. You know, how did you handle that?
I felt different. I'll be honest with you. I felt very different. Growing up with a nut allergy, I also felt different, because I was just more sensitive to foods. I didn't have the freedoms other kids have. And then as I was navigating a more restrictive list of foods that I could tolerate, I did get teasing. And especially around in that period of time from just that absolute excruciating pain, difficulty with so many systems, and then learning how to navigate and how to rebound, that period meant a lot of supplements that had to be taken at certain times, certain foods that people considered weird because they were very healthy. And so it took a lot of humor, I would say, to just sort of like deflect it and try to not take it in, which is very difficult. A lot of education of myself and a lot of deep work to just accept what is and accept myself that this is okay. And this is part of the cards that I've been dealt for this life. And how can I somehow put this to use? And maybe that's what I'm supposed to be doing with this challenge. And if so, then those other voices or those other criticisms or whatever pale in comparison to what I could be capable of doing by healing my body and then giving this to someone else, giving the information and the coaching to somebody else. And I would also say surrounding myself with people who were sensitive to what I was going through and empathetic and supportive, friends, family was key.
My dad had it. And as you were talking, I thought, you know, the fact that the head of the household kind of dictated things that he needed, and it helped me to have that. But if I had been a kid and my family had no idea what spastic colon was, still, so it is on my medical record as that. It is important because you are the odd person out.
Functional medicine, it's a term that I don't really here used a whole lot. So can you explain what that is? And if someone is going, maybe I should explore that. How do they do that?
Yeah. Functional medicine is the practice of looking at least in my experience, this has been my experience of functional medicine, is a medical practitioner who has training in med school. So it would be like someone you would see as MD. And then also understands the impact of food and natural solutions, lifestyle changes, herbs, certain ways of eating, potentially even application of Ayurveda, things like that, that together can help the human body thrive. And so I think a lot of times we go to the doctor and we just expect to walk out with a prescription. That's how we've been wired. Or, oh, I'm sorry, this is just how it is. And functional medicine takes a look and says, okay, let's not do a prescription just yet. Let's try this, an elimination diet, for instance, rather than giving me some sort of IBS medication or MS medication. So looking at those alternatives that might help the body repair and recover without needing any sort of pharmaceutical intervention. And there are, you can Google it, functional medicine. There are multiple functional medicine doctors in the Atlanta area who are great. And then there are also a few who I just love, one of whom is Dr. Andrew Weil and Dr. Mark Hyman, who have great websites, great books, just wealths of information around natural solutions that help your body work with its natural rhythms and its natural, incredible ability to heal and recover without having to turn towards a prescription yet. And in some cases, of course, prescriptions are the way you have to go, but this at least helps find maybe a better way that you wouldn't have to go that direction if you don't have to.
Let's talk a little bit about you growing up with your allergies and your nut allergies. Now, I know that in my son's school, the school bans nuts from any entering the building. So I there's no desserts or, you know, no sugar and no nuts that I can, you know, yes, I'm very pleased with his school doing that, but it alleviates any awkwardness with the kids who actually have the allergies. Mm-hmm. We are saving lives, but at the same time, it keeps them from having to feel self-conscious about it.
Yes.
But that's unique. I don't think every school system is that way. So, you know, explain a little bit to parents who may be thinking, or grandparents who may be thinking, okay, is this just attention seeking? I mean, there weren't nut allergies when I was little. How do you address that?
That's a really great point. And I'm glad that you called out the fact that kids will feel different if they are segregated in different areas. For instance, I heard a story of it was either middle school or high school, where the kids who were allergic to nuts actually had to sit at a table, and it was up at on a platform. So these kids were completely isolated from the rest of the population and higher. So it was like very obvious that they were different in some capacity. in middle school and high school, those are formative years of your self-concept and your confidence and things like that. So I would say for kids who have a genuine allergy, it is life-threatening. And what has happened for me is the reactions got worse over time. So one of the analogies I've heard is maybe it'll start off just a very gentle allergic response. And it's almost like filling a glass of water. And with each exposure and with each reaction, you're filling that glass. The challenge is you don't know how big your glass is. And at some point it will overflow. And so that could be a very serious, severe outcome. So for me, I experienced very traumatic, severe reactions. And then it wasn't until I was 18 that I actually almost died from an allergic response to a nut. And a couple of times after that, the person goes into anaphylactic shock. And for those of your listeners who might not know, is a process where eventually the throat closes, the body shuts down.
What happened? What did you eat at 18?
I was working in a high school counseling office, and I was what we called peer leaders. So I was kind of like the assistant. I would go get the kids when the counselors needed them. And one of the counselors had made a friendship bread based off of a batter from somebody else. And she had brought it and she had given me a bite of it. And I didn't even swallow it. It went into my mouth and I spit it out immediately. And it apparently had a pecan flour in it. And that was enough that it sent me into such a severe reaction that my mom was driving me to the hospital and we pulled over at a fire station because my symptoms were just so bad. Benadryl wasn't touching it. Nothing was touching it.
And you poor thing panicking because you can't breathe, right?
Yeah, right. I can't breathe and I'm breaking out in hives and everything is swelling. My ears are itching. My nose is itching. And the EMTs at the fire station said if my mom had continued to drive me, I would have died in the car. So it was a good thing that they had
pulled up for
it. Yeah. And that was within maybe 10 minutes, 10 to 15 minutes.
Wow. And when you put that bite of bread in your mouth, you could sense right away that something was wrong?
Yep.
Just as soon as it touched?
Mm-hmm. It was, in that case, it was a subconscious response. There's no rational thinking to that. It was something in my body that was like, mm-mm. This needs to
be well, because out. Your digestive system starts in your mouth. So your stomach is alerted to what is about to come down when in your mouth.
Wow.
And so obviously your body's like, we're not going to do that. I mean, and so to live with that. And so, again, in my son's school, when there's a birthday party and everything, they reiterate exactly what, not to have happen. What happened there is like, do not bring like a homemade cake that has nut in it. Like, we usually end up doing donuts or something. And, but again, it's the leadership of the school and the teachers that are instructing us, which gives it legitimacy. So I guess, the story is important for people who are listening that don't have that leadership within your classroom to be aware and to ask the questions.
Well, and Catherine, I want to talk about your children's book because this is based on your childhood. Tell us about it.
Oh, thank you for asking. So it is called Katie Can't Eat Nuts. And it's actually also illustrated by Alex now lives in Portugal, but he went to Georgia State. So he's also a Georgia Atlanta resident.
Fantastic.
At one point. Yeah. And it is about Katie, who has a nut allergy, yet she still has ordinary, extraordinary adventures. So she still goes to ballet and she plays soccer and she does make pancakes with her dad on Saturday mornings. There's also a little bit of the story that does touch on when she doesn't feel well and how she feels different, but that her group and her community includes her with being very sensitive to the snacks. She talks about the foods that she can eat to focus on the positive. And then at the end, there are activities for kids to do a word search and match her ballet slippers and find the images similar to those Highlights magazines. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, yeah. Only when I was sick and went to the doctor.
Yes. We get those.
Do you get them in the house?
Yeah, we get those.
I loved them. I loved them. And they were such an inspiration for me that I wanted to incorporate that in the book as well.
I love it.
And I'm guessing when you were growing up, there were not books like this.
No. I think I was the only kid in my school who had a nut allergy, actually. I think maybe one other kid had a strawberry allergy and it would just make her lips kind of tingle, but I was the only one who had anything like this. And I'm from Gwinnett County, which has a very large school. So it's interesting.
Right. Well, and both of my nieces have nut allergies. On one side of the family, my brother's daughter is allergic to a lot of things, eggs, nuts, and dairy. So the poor child, I mean, they have to examine every single thing before she eats anything. And I've always asked, is she going to grow out of it? And then my niece on the other side of the family has a peanut allergy. And so is there a misconception that they'll grow out of it when they get older? Because it seems like what you were describing with the glass of water analogy, that it'd be the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I actually spoke to a doctor recently, I think a few months ago, who answered this question as well. And what she spoke to is, in some cases, you can grow out of it. Tree nut allergies are not as likely to be grown out of amongst all the top 9 food allergens. It is possible, but she level sets expectations with her patients to say, just expect you won't grow out of it. And then if you do, it's a pleasant surprise versus expecting it and then trying it and potentially putting yourself in danger or just being super disappointed that you're still allergic to nuts.
Well, okay. And again, you know, I think that it's a better time now to have, you know, in the case of Jen's nieces, because there's awareness and there's books like yours. Like I was thinking, I got to get your book and donate it to my first, you know, son's first grade class this fall, because it gives her an opportunity to read this book to the class and make them sensitive to the fact that, oh, it's okay that somebody, you know, because I just think it's a part of our vernacular now where it wasn't before. So it is getting better because of people like you. But I like the fact that you have an empathy for clients who come to you because you've been through it. You're not just, you know, again, there's a lot of skeptics out there who would think, oh, she's just on the bandwagon of all this. But no, you lived it and you can help people authentically do this.
Yes. Thank you. I hope to authentically help people. And I also hope that although this might help with inclusion and acceptance and tolerance for kids and adults with food allergies, I also hope that it just is one more step in the right direction of overall inclusion of anyone who might be different, any child who might have any sort of disability or attribute that sets them apart from their peers. And that I hope is also part of a bigger conversation too.
I think we are more aware of that now as parents. And I think that through books like yours, we can start to open up those conversations and really normalize differences rather than differences feeling different or weird for our kids. Now, sort of on that track, do you feel that there are more food allergies now, or are we just more aware now?
I feel as though we have more now than we did. I feel we have more food sensitivities now and more food allergies now. And there are a couple of schools of thought to that. But one of the pieces of data from research that really stuck out with me is that as the United States continues to export our culture and our food products, we are also seeing health issues in other countries that have never before experienced anything from a chronic disease to a food allergy. So for me, that was very eye-opening.
So it's the food that we're creating in the United States, and then we're shipping it out of the U.S. and we're getting people sick. Mm-hmm. Oh, great. This is great.
Well, and also, but think about it. So we've made food corporatized.
Yes.
I'm making up words today.
It's
as
a
I go
business,
along.
But yes, but it's the industry.
Yes. And so, you know, there is a correlation from, you know, having farms and growing your own food. And again, that's people are going back to that. Restaurants are going back to that. Because the larger, you know, I think it was intended for a good reason. I don't think that the corporatizing of food was meant to be evil. But I think in order to try to keep up with demand, yes, the processes that they've put together, in my point of view, is they're not understanding the effects of that, which is gluten allergies and this allergy and that allergy. Because to me, it's like, you know, how are they changing the way we eat? My brother talked one time about, he's a big tortilla chip fan, right? Always been big tortilla. He introduced me to Doritos back in the day, and he just is, but he had to stop eating them because he started to develop rash on his face from, he realized, wait a second, I'm eating these same chips he's always eaten. And, you know, but then all of a sudden he started getting rashes and he realized, well, maybe it's the chips. And then when he did away with the chips, his rash went away. And so he's like, okay, what did they do differently with my chips? Mm-hmm. They're not made the way they used to be made. So, you know, I just think that sometimes I think we're like infants you know, infants in a rush to do things and not understanding that we need to think through. I understand what you're saying about more allergies, because I think we're just haphazardly looking at food as not the medicine we should be thinking food as.
Yes. And my own experience is, nut allergies aside, because I'm allergic to nuts no matter what country I'm in. But when I've been in Western European countries that have different standards for what is allowed in cosmetics and food products, I can tolerate gluten and dairy without issue. Whereas really? In this country, I cannot. Oh, and I shared that with, can't remember who I shared that with, but it was a doctor. And she was saying that she's had numerous patients who have had that experience. And there are actually much more stringent regulations and guidelines and mandates in the European Union than there are in the United States. We allow a lot more chemicals into our systems.
Okay. So Catherine, as a wellness junkie and here on The Frenzy, as we focus on women over 40, mm-hmm. I have heard this phrase recently and I wanted to get your opinion on it. I've heard you can't outrun your fork. Now, do you agree and why?
That is such, I have never heard that before. I love it. You can't outrun your fork. I would say you can't outrun your fork is true. Especially thinking about the conversation we just had around quality of food and the content of what you put in your mouth. So if I'm eating all of my calories from the Doritos, or all of my calories, which would be so many, I mean, imagine how many heads of lettuce you'd have to eat to equate the same amount of Doritos, like it would be insane. But you're actually getting minerals and different information from a fruit or a vegetable than you are even steak. Like, just different, your body is going to have a different chemical reaction, because what you put in is telling your body, oh, now I need to do this. Oh, now I need to strengthen this. Or now I need to have an insulin response, which is then going to throw my blood sugar off in a couple of hours. So for your women over 40, and I would say this is good advice for everyone, pay attention to what you're eating, how you're feeling and why you're reaching for that, and then how you feel after. Just pay attention. I mean, that's the first step. I would say a step beyond that is to keep a food journal and to actually look at holistically over 7 days, what did you eat? How much water did you have? Even paying attention to your sleep, because we really underestimate and undervalue the healing and performance properties of good sleep. It is we cannot evolve out of sleep. And it does everything from solidify short-term memory. So if you're thinking about, you're on a new job, you're learning new skills, those skills will set as you're sleeping. Same with learning a new language. When kids are learning things in school, sleep is so important, and it is part of our natural detoxing system. So if you're not doing that, your hormones are going to be out of whack. You're going to crave sugar. You're not going to remember as much. You are going to be full as much. So you're going to want more food. Just your whole body gets out of whack.
Let's also talk to the women over 40 who I know who just assume I'm going to be fat, who just assume I'm going to be diabetic, who just assume I'm going to get, because that's, well, my mother was that way. My father was that way. It's just what happens over 40. So let's talk about this myth that you are destined to be out of shape and sick when you're older.
I love that you brought this up. And I think this is part of the ageism that you both have talked about ageism in our culture. And I think that this is part of it. I think it's part of that bigger formula for shifting some of our beliefs in this country, but it is not necessarily predestined that past a certain age, you will look X, whatever it might be, or you will feel X. Can you do the same things you did at 15 or 25 and expect it's still going to work when you're 40, when you're getting like absolutely no sleep and just eating Swiss cake rolls? Probably not.
Those were good.
There's a compounding effect, because now maybe then you have 15 years of Swiss cake rolls. Now you're at 40 years. Like, there's going to be a little bit of a shift there because it's compounding. But I would say you have the power to change your health. You absolutely have the power to change your health. Genetics might load the gun, but lifestyle pulls the trigger. So just because you might have a family history of something, it does not mean you have to have that. So if you set yourself up for success and say, like, I'm going to do everything I can to not get that, chances are much higher you won't get that. But if
say that phrase again,
Yeah, one more time. We got to remember that.
Okay. So genetics load the gun, but lifestyle pulls the trigger.
Love that. And if you are on YouTube, I've been meaning to point out, I mean, Catherine has muscles in her shoulders that I didn't know existed. So just saying that, I mean, and I hope that doesn't make you feel uncomfortable. It's just an observation. But if we're on YouTube, just know, I'm like, oh, my goal is to have Catherine's shoulders. Anyway, sorry.
That is quarantine. I will be 100% honest with you. That is like a disciplined, dedicated exercise regimen that is not super intense, by the way. Like, it's not like 2 hours every day, but I took the time that used to be in the car and put it a little bit into the workout.
See, that's lifestyle. It's lifestyle because I have a friend who is.
I'm going to use your shoulders as motivation.
Seriously, I'm telling you, you got to check out YouTube. So, but I do have a friend who is not physically active, and she keeps talking about how she's going to get there. So, you know, when you talk about lifestyle, we've talked about food, and food is medicine, and you have to do that. But also, exercise is something you can't ignore.
Yes, because you can't outrun the fork. Like, you really can't. But you have to do both. You have to do both. And something else that you've all said on your podcast is pay attention to what you consume. And consuming is not only what goes in your mouth. It is the messages you hear from the people around you, from the news on TV, from the social media, from the books you read, from the songs you listen to, everything. It has a chemical effect on many different parts of your body that you can't even see. The microbiota, I think that's how it's pronounced, but it responds in ways that determine the food you crave, your overall health, all sorts of things. And it reacts to the things that you hear. And so I think to your friend who says like, oh, I'll do it one day. Just do one thing today. What is one thing you can do? And it might be 5 minutes of just a walk around the block. It might be writing down 5 things that you are grateful and appreciate about yourself. Like, I think that's something that we forget to do is you are a very magical, incredible being who is still here in the same body that you had. I think, Melissa, you said this, like that you've had since you were born. You're in that same body and your body keeps you running. It's still rocking and rolling. Like, that's incredible, you know, and every person has so many unique gifts. Just don't lose sight of all of that you can bring to the world. And I think that is something that could be part of your health regimen. 5 things. What's one thing? Walk around the block, drink an extra glass of water between your cups of coffee. Don't give up the coffee.
Right.
And Catherine, if somebody is hearing you right now and they want individualized time with you, that's something that you provide your clients, right?
That's right. Yes.
Tell us about it.
Yep. So from the beginning, it is all about collaborating and co-creating the plan. So I don't dictate it for anyone. I ask some questions that help them get clear on where it is they want to go and why. And the why is very, very important. So where you want to go and why, and then what are the things that stand in your way and how can I help you get over those things? And in some cases, it's everything from you want to lose weight to your doctor says, if you don't change your cholesterol, then you'll have to go on a medication to your joints hurt and you're not sure why. And things like that. So it's taking a holistic approach, using things that are very applicable to most of us and putting them to use for that person in a meaningful way that they can get behind and commit to.
I've said to my son before the language of imagine your body's a machine and you're just having to figure out how your machine works. Your machine is not going to work like everybody else's machine. And he hates sleep. So he's asked me many times, what is the purpose of sleep? So I'm just going to have him listen to this podcast to, look, honey, there's a reason that you need to sleep, but he'll fight it his whole life. That's fine. Where can people get in touch with you if they want to be a part of your team?
Yes. So I am on Instagram at Catherine Kise, KatherineKise. And then also my website is KatherineKise.com.
All right. So Catherine, something we do before we end all of our interviews, and you've heard this before, is the Frenzy Five. So now you're in the hot seat and this is what the first thing that comes to your mind. Okay. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Sure you're ready. Okay.
Sure.
All right. The first question is, where is your cozy, happy place?
My couch.
What is your favorite framed thing in your home?
I had a miniature schnauzer who passed away earlier this year, and a friend of mine took a picture of him and put it on the body of like almost a Sergeant Pepper, but it looks perfect. And it looks like an oil painting that was like really nice. And so I would say that's
he's got a little suit on. Oh, sorry for your loss.
Oh, thank you.
That's a cute way to commemorate him.
It's so much fun. Yeah.
What is your most memorable birthday?
That's a tough one. I have two. I will go with when I was 16, my parents threw me a surprise party. And that to me was just the best because it's a surprise party and I was 16 and it was like a magical time. So I'll say that was the most memorable.
Cute. What's a daily routine or ritual that you stick to?
Working out in the morning.
Shoulders.
Now, look at those shoulders. I'm telling you, can tell.
We already knew. We already knew. It's her arm workout. We're all jealous.
Yeah. We're not trying to make you feel different than us, Catherine. We talk about inclusion. Okay. Yes. Just you have exposed me to new things in my shoulders I didn't know exist. And then finally, what fashion trend did you jump on?
Any of them. Think 80s, 90s.
The 90s overalls, but also athleisure. Like
it's a toss up. 90s overalls. I forgot about those.
Yes, nobody's brought the overalls up.
That's so funny. And those are the things that you left in your closet for years, going, well, maybe they'll come back in. And you passed by them, right? And you're like, well, I don't want to donate them to Goodwill yet, but maybe they'll come back in. And they never did. Nope. We're still waiting on the overall.
Give it time. Look, I'm a child of the 80s, and now kids are dressing up like me, like the old people, because, you know, it's cool. So those 90s overalls will be back.
That's right.
Catherine, I've learned so much. Thank you for today and spending your time with us. It has been quite a pleasure. And thank you so much for all you're doing for the kids with allergies or, you know, special, unique things that are going on with them to make them feel included is awesome.
Thank you. Thank you so, so much for having me. I'm just honored to be here and being here.
Yes. Y'all can find out more at KatherineKise.com. That's K-I-S-E. Of course, we'll share it in the show notes. You can also follow her on Instagram at Katherine Kise.
And Jen Hobby has this week's mirror mantra to kick off season 2.
So we've talked a lot today about new beginnings, and I want you to get this in your head. It is never too late to start something new. Okay? Never. So your mirror mantra this week is to look at yourself eye to eye and say, I am the perfect age to do this. And that's anything that you want to start, whether that's a new health and wellness journey, whether that's writing a book, whether that's starting something creative, whether that's making a new friend or getting back on the dating scene. Just say to yourself, I am the perfect age to do this. I saw a story recently I wanted to share with you, and it was about this grandmother who started taking her granddaughter to martial arts classes because parents were working. They needed grandma to do the, you know, the kid taxi, right? So grandma started taking the granddaughter and she was enjoying watching this martial arts so much. And this grandmother said, you know what? I want to ask the instructor if I can do the class too. I've never taken one before, and neither has my granddaughter. So she started doing it. Fast forward a couple years, at 83 years old, she got her black belt.
Atta girl. That's right. Wonderful.
How amazing is that? So she started something new in her 70s because she thought she'd enjoy it with her granddaughter, and she was not going to be sitting there or tapping away on her phone while the granddaughter was in the lesson. She just happened to ask the instructor, hey, could I join this kid's class? And the instructor's like, yes, heck yeah, come on.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So if that granny can start martial arts in her 70s and get her black belt by 83, it's never too late to start anything.
Oh, that's wonderful. And you make an excellent point, because and watching the Olympics, you know, we've been watching the Olympics and it, you know, we celebrate and glorify youth, which youth deserves it, but they're not the only ones that deserve it. And we, for some reason, feel like every time, especially in a sporting world, well, they're retiring by 24. They're retiring before the age of 30. Oh my gosh. There was somebody who was 32 on the pool deck during one of the races. It's like, oh, at the age of 32, can he hang? And it's like, you know, we believe that. I mean, I'm sure, of course, in competitive swimming and competitive extreme sports, that is the case, but yet they're saying that for a reason comparatively. They're not saying it to tell you that 32 is the oldest you can be to do anything, right? And somehow we've believed the fact that there's a certain age, and usually 40 is the age where we think that we're starting to decline after that. And it's, oh, I just love that story because it's not true. It is not true.
And think about all the new things that that granny learned by just jumping in and saying, I'm going to start something new. I'm going to do martial arts. Now she's a black belt and she's going to train other people how to do it. So incredible.
Love it.
So, you know, life is still here. We got to be thankful for another day. You're breathing oxygen. You're living amongst the glory of this creation. So go for it.
Why not? You're here. Yes. Do something. Why not? You know what? You're here. So, I mean, you might as well do something with it instead of sitting around and waiting for it to be over. I just really think that women who turn 40 and start dreading the age of 40, it's just so sad. It's a sad lack of opportunity. And that's what we're here to change with the Frenzy, which we also started. She after the age of 40, me after the age of 50. So if there's a friend of yours, that's right. So if there's a friend of yours who would enjoy this episode, we would love for you to share that with her. Plus check out our brand new YouTube channel. We've got extended videos and interviews there. Just search the Frenzy on YouTube.
And please sign up for our weekly email. We're going to send the episode right to your inbox, and we include different links to things that we have discussed. And so if you want to dive a little bit deeper into some of these topics, those are in the email newsletter. So sign up at thefrenzy.com today.
And we want to thank listeners who have subscribed to our email list at thefrenzy.com. And that is Melissa Barfield, Angie Gray, and Jennifer Frederick. They don't know we're doing this, but we pay attention and they sign up during the summer. So we really appreciate that. Thank you so much.
The Frenzy is hosted and produced by Melissa Carter, that beautiful woman right there.
Hello.
And me, Jen Hobby.
Hottie McCotty. And sound editing by Bo Johnson.
Original soundtrack produced by Tammy Hurt for Placement Music, written and recorded by Mark Daniels.
The Frenzy celebrates friendships over 40, so we thank you so much for spending time with us, and we love your friendship.
So until next week, trust your gut,
share your story,
and stop lying about your age.
We got to practice. Welcome to season 2. We'll see you next time. Bye.